other yak babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, a new podcast on the internet sponsored by Banana Phone. Ring, 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 Banana Phone. My name's Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hello, listeners.
Yeah, this is Brick.
Hello, listeners.
Calling from across the seas, old Irish Nico.
Hey, Aaron.
Some patterns never change. Our topic this time is romance novels. This I came upon this because I was thinking about, we talk about literary fiction versus genre fiction quite a bit, and we sort of have our, you know, nits to pick with literary fiction and some of the kind of more boring and standards and conventions of that field. And we tend to maybe praise or be more interested in novels or literature that has more of a genre fiction approach to it. But one genre we never really talk about is romance, and it's a huge one. Romance is like the best-selling genre of literature in the country, if not the world. It has like a 19% market share, I think, something like that. It's crazy. The closest we've gotten, I would say, would be 50 Shades of Grey, probably. And I guess Little Black Dress, the James Patterson book shot that we...
Come for Bigfoot.
And Come for
Bigfoot. We've done some erotica, for sure. But what about that werewolf book, too? That's probably...
Chuck Tingle.
Naked Werewolf. Yeah, I guess Tingle will be in there, too.
Well, I guess, is there... What's the line between romance and erotica?
I think erotica is a subset of romance, from what my research has told me.
Like, just like cozy is a subset of mystery.
When I hear romance, I go straight to like the very specific Harlequin romance.
Right. So that was like the first sort of mainstream categorization of romance as a genre was the Harlequin stuff that was imported from the UK. And I guess one of the publishers of the Harlequin stuff, they refused to publish the more salacious titles from the UK. And this is all crib from Wikipedia, by the way, so I'm just ripping Wikipedia off. And then one of the publishers, one of the family that controlled the company, read one of the like saucier books and was like, I wonder if people would like this shit. Obviously, he was cranking off to it. They tested, marketed it, and it sold like crazy. They were like, oh, we should do like the sexier stuff because people are dying for that. And so then that became this kind of fused genre of, I mean, it's described as women's pornography, right? Like romance novels are sort of like positioned and criticized or praised as like pornography for women. It's like a socially acceptable version of like porn and erotica, which Fifty Shades of Grey definitely was. We talked about that in the, in the drunk episode, that this is like a way to normalize erotica and porn for an audience that doesn't typically get served by the porn industry, right?
Wait, so Fifty Shades was romance rather than erotica?
I mean, I think it's erotica, but I think that all the conventions are there, right? It's the same, it seems to be the same trope where it's like the woman lead character has to sort of in some ways like tame or become worthy of the sort of alpha male character. And that's where the conflict comes in. Like, can they sort of share a space, right? And then in the E.L. James case, like the sex was very explicit, but it might be sort of more or less explicit based on the kind of publication or publisher you're reading from. But that's the kind of, that's the romance formula. So I guess I wonder, like, why do we avoid romance fiction? Like, why hasn't romance become rehabilitated the same way that crime fiction has? I think I know the answer, but I'm curious to hear what your thoughts
are. Well, I think first you got to go backwards and ask if you've ever flipped it through any of those or read any of them. They're fucking saucy. They are like,
yeah,
they're pretty sexual and pretty graphic. Mm-hmm. And like my grandmother
Even
would
your
just
Amish ones.
No, I'm talking like the shit from like the 50s and 60s, like the Harlequin, like the old ones with the Fabio looking dude on the cover holding the woman whose clothes are draping, and they were like pretty close to just porn. And it was also totally cool to read those, you know, outside of church or like in like these like super socially aware waspy settings. Like my grandmother would read them at the pool, but like at our social club and stuff, and like, you know, no one's breaking out a Playboy or reading. I think 50 Shades of Grey might be where that came back, but I think a lot of the time if you're reading those kind of things in public, people are like, oh, you're what's going on there? But somehow they pulled it off. We're like, yeah, that's cool. Like, God forbid anyone says the word penis on TV, or you can't kiss in public or whatever else, but you can just whip this thing up and read it outside the drive-in movie theater. And like, how did they cross that acceptance barrier of prudishness, I guess. Because I think my answer to your question would be the reason why it's hard to bring it back is it's so thoroughly planted in that tradition that it doesn't really budge. So the people just go there and it's almost like walled off. And it's like, yeah, it's there. It's fine. No one thinks about it.
Well, what do you mean, Aaron, by rehabilitated? Like,
well, I feel like in the past 20 years, there's been a movement in some literary criticism circles to elevate genre fiction, right? Like mystery, detective fiction, fantasy fiction was for a long time. And you see it in MFA programs, it's always ghettoized. You know, it's like we're writing literary fiction, we're doing Updike and Roth and Joyce Carol Oates. We're not doing Brandon Sanderson, right? We're not doing like genre stuff. And I think that there's been a push to argue that genre has just as much validity as literary fiction does, and in some cases more. Like people will certainly argue that literary fiction has more rewards that genre fiction has more rewards than literary fiction does, because there's more emphasis on plot. It's not as navel-gazy. It's not as like pompous, you know, whatever. All things that are, you know, can be more or less true depending on your perspective. But I feel like in that conversation, I don't hear as often people saying also romance novels are good. Like I feel like they're mostly saying like male oriented fiction, like crime and mystery and sci-fi is, but romance fiction, the audience is like 90% women, right? And that doesn't get the same level of critical rethinking. No one's saying, go out and read Daniel Steele or I don't know, there's only romance novel I can think of right now, because it's not as acceptable as
the other. How much, you said they have 19% market share for those? How much of that do you think is they're just like that? That's not how much are you going to move that needle?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I do think that there seems to be. I'm not an expert on this, and maybe you aren't either. I don't know. There seems to be a fair amount of romance. I don't know how the right words for it, but that type of story and that type of artwork in the comic space. I feel like I see a lot of romance comics kind of passed around on Twitter or whatever else.
Definitely more so now, for sure. There's, I think, a young contingent of writers and artists who are interested in, manga has done this for years, right? So Japanese comics have had a really diverse array of genres for a long time, whereas American comics have been mostly focused on superheroes for the majority of the 20th century. So romance is having a comeback in comic space because I think of the influence of manga. Younger readers who grew up reading manga and don't have the same kind of weird biases and racism against it are now like, why couldn't there be a comic about two people that just like are in love and also play tennis? That seems fine, and that's great. I mean, that's cool. Like, would any of you either ever seek out and read a romance novel? Like, have you ever, and would you ever, besides the one we listed that were all erotica driven and were mostly read for fun on our podcast, not for serious consideration?
I'd read a book about, like, I'd read a romantic book, you know, a book about a relationship or something. I would. My experience with those books is largely my experience with fantasy books, which is why I don't like them, which is they are long and cheesy and kind of written quickly. And they're more like space fillers and time chewers than they are things that I want. And I can see why there was a lot of need for space chewers and time fillers in 1965. I got plenty of space chewers and time fillers now, so I don't usually, when I gravitate, the books I gravitate towards are things that are going to challenge me in some way or feed a specific want that I have, whereas most of what I think I would get out of that kind of romance book, I'm going to find in a more satisfying way in a movie or in a TV show, or I'm going to get that relationship story from something more challenging like a literary fiction book, which is where I go for that right now. So I don't see,
right?
I don't see, that just doesn't appeal to me, but I can understand why it would appeal to lots of people. And I guess 19% of people who buy books. So
yeah, I guess I can't imagine being at a bookstore and like on a whim picking up a J.D. Robb / Nora Roberts book. I would read one with you guys and give it serious consideration if we were going to talk about it. And who knows, maybe I would like it. I doubt it, but I would, you know, try to approach it with an open mind. But on my own, yeah, like Brick says, I just can't. There's too much other stuff that I want to fill my time with.
Yeah, I think there are some maybe like kind of cross genre books like Outlander. That's like considered a romance, but like I would probably read Outlander. I think I just wouldn't be interested in a straight romance book because that feels like a B plot to me. Like since like most movies and TV shows have romance arcs, but they're like it's not the point of the show. You know, like I get plenty of relationship stuff in, you know, the movies and TV shows I'm already watching. I don't need like books unless one's like has something besides that to offer. And I don't know, I'm just not interested enough to research it, I guess.
Nico, you have more, you probably read the most genre fiction of all of us. Like, how do you feel about the convention? So if like part of the criticism of romance novels is that they're pretty conventional, they're kind of the same plots over and over again, and expectations are built into the readership. Like, would that be something that you would relate to more because you are like sci-fi reading, that kind of stuff, and fantasy novel reading, or is that something that would be also like a negative?
It would be a negative for me, but I mean, I think the reason like that there's no impetus to like change that or to kind of re-examine that is because they clearly just make enough money, like, and that seems to be like the primary goal of the romance genre is like to produce a lot and sell a lot of books, which is fine. And I think a lot of genre fiction is that, like, I feel like genre writers are more like, I don't want to say hardworking, but like, you know, like they treat it like a job, you know, whereas like literary writers, like, you know, might take 5 years to write a book, like a genre writer, if they take more than 6 months, you know, I would say that's a long time. And I do think the quality, like you mentioned Brandon Sanderson, I've read a lot of his books. He's not a great writer. Like he's fine. His characters are okay. You know, they're often pretty cheesy, but he's one of the world's best plotters, so, you know, makes up for it. You know, like so I think with genre fiction, like you definitely kind of have to go to it for what it's gonna give you rather than necessarily trying to find the break, like the Game of Thrones of, you know, romance, which I guess would be Outlander.
I think so. I think you're right.
I wonder, and I don't know if any of us can answer this question. I wonder, when I look at romance books, they seem like 99% interchangeable to me. And I know that's
mostly... Would you mostly, not say something about like a fantasy?
I would probably say something very similar to fantasy. Yeah.
Right.
But I think Nico could answer this question for fantasy. Maybe you can answer this for romance since he's our resident erotica editor. But yeah. What...
Emeritus.
Gotcha. What's the distinction between a good romance novel and a not good romance novel? Is it straight down to plotting, and does it have a good surprise, and does it tie up the knots satisfyingly? I can't imagine it comes down to quality of line by line writing, or like the, I doubt anyone's like judging them on sexiness, though maybe they are. I don't know. I wonder, or does it matter? Is it just like, yeah, here's a, you know, it's like the book equivalent of flipping through the channels. I don't know.
I mean, I would say most genre, like I'm relatively familiar with fantasy and mysteries and a little bit with sci-fi, and there's kind of, there's that subgenre thing that we were talking about where you can like, you divide like the genre mystery up into, do you want a cozy mystery? Do you want a hardboiled? Do you want a detective novel? Do you want a cop novel? Do you want, you know, a police procedural? And that is kind of an effect of it being a more mechanical genre, like just kind of like Brick, you were saying, like, you know, yeah, they are largely going to be time fillers, and like you don't want to fuck around with a cozy if what you want is a hard-boiled novel. So they like make that very clear, and like I'm sure there's some genre fans that will just buy any cozy, you know, and there's some
that I'm really would looking buy to our any cozy episode now.
Yeah, any like space opera, say, And then I think within that, like the authors that people kind of follow would be known for certain things. Like, and I don't think there's really any formula necessarily to that, because like some would have better characters, some would have better plots, you know. Like I think it's just a bit more bald-faced, maybe more transparent is the word I'm looking for, than like literary novels. Like, we tend not to describe, I don't think, literary novels by saying like, this guy is good at characters, bad at plots, terrible dialogue, but like, you know, good moments or whatever. But it would be very common to do that with genres, I think, because you just like, because I don't think people, like authors, try to do it all. I think they just do what they're good at, and that's it.
And I think the audiences are, my understanding, I mean, this could be wrong with this, is that audiences are more forgiving of genre fiction, right?
What, so I think when it is that transparent, then it's like, you know what you're getting, you know, like the advertising, right, is a bit more honest than like literary books, where like everyone is going to be a dazzling tour de force and it's hilarious, and then it turns out not to be any of those things. Whereas genre books, they just lay out exactly what
there's also a lot less left to interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if the plot doesn't satisfy you, if the sort of resolution of the mystery or the romance, whatever it is, sort of this kind of a bummer, you're like, oh, this one wasn't so good, I didn't really like it, but you move on to the next one.
Right.
Whereas Brick, reading Ian McEwan novels every year, and right, they're increasingly terrible. We talk about what's wrong with Ian McEwan. Like, is he like melting down?
I still think he owes money to mobsters.
But you wouldn't, you probably wouldn't have the same reaction to a genre fiction novel or author. You'd be like, oh, this one didn't hit, next one will be good. That's how I feel about comics often. It's like, oh, this one wasn't great, but I'll read the next issue for sure. It's more a refillable versus seeing each text as distinct and like needs to be considered on its own specific merits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and also the next one will always come out very soon.
Yeah, it'll be really soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's thousands more to choose from if that one's going to take extra time, right? So, folks, I have a Harlequin novel right here.
Ooh.
This was purchased for me by friends on their honeymoon. This is by Claire Conley. The title of the novel is Spaniard's Baby of Revenge.
Spaniard's Baby of Revenge? Wow.
Yep. Notice the pregnant woman on the cover in the dress. Here's the description in the back. His vengeance was strictly business until he discovers she's carrying his heir. Antonio Herrera's plan is simple. Persuade innocent Emilia DiSalvo to sell the shares in his rival's business. But what the Spanish billionaire didn't plan on was their intense connection. Now Antonio only has one aim, the ultimate seduction. So he's stunned to discover their 9-month consequence. To secure his heir, he'll do the unthinkable and shockingly pleasurable and make Emilia his wife. Enter a world of revenge, romance, and shocking consequences. So I'm going to read this, and I am laying down the yak challenge to my personal pals to also acquire and read a romance novel, and we'll discuss them sometime in the future. We'll do a special romance recap episode and see what we thought. Choose, I say, whatever suits you. If it's Outlander for Nico, great. If it's bestiality porn for Dave, that's fine too. which way home for Bricks, what get is. Well, find a romance novel that you want to read or that intrigues you and read it, and we'll regroup and see what we find. Does that sound reasonable?
I'm reading a cozy first.
Oh yeah, we're doing that
too. Right. Aaron, can you read the opening line to that book?
Sure. Beneath him, Madrid sparkled like 1,000 jewels, the nightlights twinkling against the inky black of the sky. It was a city of history, a city rich with stories, but in that moment, Antonio Herrera was conscious of only his own history. A history that had been defined by a family feud, a hatred, a hatred that was ingrained in his soul and heart as any one man could ever have felt.
Was that the
Some might say that his life
Family had been Feud theme song you were singing?
It was. But Antonio knew the truth. Hatred for the DiSalvo family ran through his Spanish blood, poisoned his mind, and he would stop at nothing to fight this war. No. To end it. There you go. Other titles in the series: The Italian Demands His Heirs, The Sicilian Secret Son, Innocence 9-Month Scandal, Chosen as the Sheik's Royal Bride, Acclaiming My Untouched Mistress, and Redeemed by a Shock Pregnancy. There's a theme here.
That feels like it's goes beyond subgenre just to straight fetish. Like, and then it's like If you like one of those, you're going to like them all.
You would love Zabiba the King.
If you like impregnation.
Right. Impregnation Foreigners. Play,
then here it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a like, kind of a weird like exoticization thing here that's maybe not
a little gross.
Super seemly. It does. We'll find out more once I finish Spaniards, Baby of Revenge.
Madrid well, listeners, was a city of history.
No, his history. Dun, dun, dun. Listeners, tell us about your experience with genre fiction and romance specifically. Are you reading romance novels? And if so, are you like Brick's grandma getting off to him at the pool? Let us know. Find us on Twitter at YakBabies and email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com so we can hear all about it. You can also find us on Patreon, patreon.com/YakBabies for $1 a month. You can get access to a bunch of content there. We're playing games. We're doing power hours. Emi Machine is happening there. Also, lots of just like clips from episodes that weren't released in the main feed because they are too offensive typically or reveal personal secrets that we don't actually want out there, but then we're asking you to pay for them. So you can do that. Find access to all that carnival of fun on Patreon. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to thank all their loyal listeners and especially their patrons past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, David, and William Howard Taft.